I'm not sure who is now our host here. Yavakala, people of South Africa.
Yes, sir, uyavakala ngakolami mfana.
Oh, okay, slowly. All right. Mr. Brown is still abroad. So, Umalthando is having network problems where she is. So, can you help us get roll call, Sistoli?
Okay, greetings, honorable member, Chetan and the DPE stakeholders. The apologies that were received is is honorable Sukers. She's attending another meeting. And then from the DPE side is the minister and also the deputy minister. Those are the apologies we received. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, as for members, we should be forming a quorum, right? We've got Madlingozi, no data. And the animals.
Good morning, Chairperson. I hope you can hear me.
Are you here, Llewellyn?
Yes, Llewellyn,
Hi, man.
I can give you
Are
all.
you back? What is going on? Are you back in the country? Where are you? Are you in France?
No,
I'm still in France, Chairperson, but can I do a roll call for you?
Please.
It's yourself, Honorable Gigaba. It's Honorable Morwa Sekla, Honorable Lexie, Honorable Yabo, Honorable Nodada, Honorable Van Zyl, and Honorable Madlingozi, currently present on the platform. Chair, we have a quorum. We can continue with the meeting. As Dolly indicated, we have one apology for Honorable Sukers and the Minister and Deputy Minister. Thank you, Chair.
I said you are a soldier. Thank you so much, Llewellyn.
You
You
don't see
wanted
me from France. You can't see me from France.
an H5.
Yeah,
You
you see, that's the
can't see
beauty of online meetings.
me.
Thank
You
you so
can't see me at France, Mr. Brown.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, members.
Thank you so much for your assistance, Mr. Brown. Okay, members, let me welcome then everybody in the meeting. We are back for the third quarter. We are in full swing back in Parliament. Up front, one must just say that we apologize for the inconvenience. You know, we were supposed to be processing Bella Bill issues. We couldn't. Reasons being, I honestly took it as light work that the officials needed to do, but apparently there is a lot of work one. They needed to rearrange all the submissions, but two, we know in Parliament for you to get a venue you must apply, so they needed to get it to apply first for a venue so that they be allocated a venue. And three, two of them are working with Finland Group too. So there was a lot last week, and I thought that it was gonna be a quick thing to do, and it was my mistake, but they are on full swing now, dealing with the submission. So we thought instead of not having a meeting because they were not going anyway to be done by today, we had then agreed that let us get a presentation from DPE. I know according to our program, we were supposed to have a briefing on NSNP from DPE, but also because of we had to rush DPE to get us a presentation. So getting an NSNP for them was not going to be easy because they needed to get a presentation from two provinces, which is Eastern Cape and KZN. So it was a bit diermakar, but we managed. And I want to thank you very much, DG, and your team for managing to give us a presentation in a very short space period of time. And we know you were not even in your offices when we wanted a presentation. Your whole staff was in Free State, I think, when we wanted this presentation. So it was hectic even from your side, but thank you very much for really understanding. So that's where we are. As I have been welcoming everybody, we are going to get then presentation on inclusive education for today. We are going to proceed then with Bella bill issues next week, and it is going to be a fiscal meeting in Parliament. Can we then adopt the agenda?
Chairperson,
Principal,
are you able to see my hand?
Yes, I see your hand.
Well, thank you very much. And good morning to yourself. Good morning to the Minister and the Deputy Minister. And good morning to the officials from DBE, led by he himself, Ndatemweli. And let me rise here and move for the adoption of this agenda as a guideline for today's deliberations. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Adlon.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning. I second the move to adopt the agenda as it is. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Director General Mweli, can I hand over to you? The minister and the DM are not in the meeting, most as the apologies. So let me hand over to you, DG.
Good morning, Chair, Honorable Chair, and Honorable Members and colleagues. I hope you can hear me, Chair.
What did you?
Yeah, on a lighter note, I am very disappointed that this meeting is not face to face. I had hoped to at least go to Cape Town. I had not been going to Cape Town. I thought the chair will insist that we go to Cape Town.
Next week you must come. I insist.
Unfortunately, I might be in the U.S. We are called by UNESCO to New York next week with the minister. Otherwise, I would have loved to see honorable members, because I'm not sure I'll be able to recognize them when I meet with them in the social gatherings and elsewhere. That's just on a lighter note. Chair, we're presenting to you a progress report on inclusive education. As you correctly pointed out, you instructed us to put together a presentation when you are instructed by the boss of your boss. All that you can do is to ask how high you must jump. So we put this presentation together. We're giving a progress since the inception of White Paper 6 on inclusive education to date. It's probably maybe a good thing to do. Even a report which could be used by the minister for the incoming 7th administration. I must indicate upfront that our intention was to take a 360 degrees. We've managed to take a 350 degrees because of the speed with which we needed this information from provinces. Some of it is not complete. But 90 to 95% of it is indeed complete. Honorable members would have seen that already from the presentation. And I'm saying it's 350 degrees, not 360, because in our slide of indicating the adequacy funding for inclusive education schools, we did not include our proposals that we have put forward with provinces on how they should phase in adequacy funding. In other words, to fund learners with special education needs to the level of being no fee paying schools. Inclusive education by its very nature worldwide, it's a very expensive undertaking for obvious reasons, because you need extra support and extra care that you need to provide to the most vulnerable in society, and which is what we are enjoined to do. We have not finalized our discussions with provinces on what we have proposed to them regarding phasing in, so we did not include that information because it would be negotiating with provinces in bad faith when we are already sharing the information with the portfolio committee and the public. So I'm just putting that disclaimer out, Chair, to say some of this is fully not covered. We've also not included the expenditure on LSPID, the grant for learners with profound and severe intellectual disabilities, because we do report on those in other reports that we provide, either be it annual reports that we'll be providing soon to the portfolio committee. And the provinces are still working on the final figures that will inform the final reports eventually. Auditing and so on has just been concluded, so that information was not readily available for us. So just because it's a very long presentation, and I've requested colleagues not to dwell much on the detail, but to speak to the slides and to speak to the information as best as they can, so that we don't keep honorable members only listening to us, because of value to us is to get input, guidance, and advice from the honorable members than just to spend most of the time going through the presentation. So we have on the platform Dr. Mtembu, who is the branch head for curriculum. We have Dr. Semilani and Mr. Ngobo. We are not in the same place. I'm in our offices in Pretoria. Dr. Mtembu, I think he should be also in his office here. But Dr. Semilani, I'm told, is out in Mpumalanga. So my understanding was that he was the one who was going to take us through the presentation. In case of anything, Mr. Ngobo, as the responsible manager, would also then come in and take the committee through the presentation. Otherwise, we are here, Chair, to do the presentation and take comments and questions. Dr. Semilani, please take over.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Thanks, DG, for the opportunity. Let me request Mr. Ngobo to fly the presentation as I'll be attempting to present it. I have challenges in actually flighting it from my side.
Mr. Ngobo, I can imagine, because you are in the field. Mr. Ngobo, Mr. Mahara can assist to flight it.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much, TG. Yeah, if we could get it on presentation mode, I think we are almost ready to go. Thank you very much. This is the presentation reporting on progress, as DG has already alluded to. We are presenting the progress that has been made on implementing Education White Paper 6 from 2001. Next slide, please. This is the outline of the presentation. Next slide. The purpose is to present to the Portfolio Committee on progress on the implementation of the inclusive education policy, as it were, in the form of White Paper 6. Next slide. This is one of the mandates for developing an inclusive basic education system in South Africa, which derives from the National Development Plan, that we need to provide for inclusive education in basic education as well, for a number of benefits that may be accrued, especially for learners with disabilities, so that eventually they can acquire the knowledge and skills for them to live independently. Next slide. There are a few challenges that have remained kind of stubborn over the years of implementing the inclusive education policy. One of them, it's the persistent conceptual misalignment on inclusive education and the sort of an interchangeable use and perception of inclusive education and special needs education, whereas special needs education is a component of inclusive education. Also, the fact that since 2001, we've been implementing inclusive education from a white paper, which actually articulates, in terms of its status, it articulates policy intentions or aspirations. So therefore, that limits the deployment of resources to the program, because it's not a white paper, is not a fully fledged policy, as it were. And then, of course, the mobilization of out-of-school children with disabilities or learners with disabilities have actually been stifled by the fact that it hasn't quite been approached from a multidisciplinary approach, as it should, because even implementing inclusive education requires a multidisciplinary approach. Next slide. Just to give a perspective on progress, starting from access to basic education, what progress have we made to provide access to basic education, particularly for learners with disabilities? Here, we are looking at the progress we've made from 2002 to 2022, where the number of special schools have actually almost doubled. And so has the enrollment in special schools, that has more than doubled. The number of full service schools from 30 to 832. And also, we have seen learners with disabilities or with special needs also admitted in mainstream schools or ordinary schools, reaching 121,000 by 2022. And since 2017, when we introduced the learners with severe to profound intellectual disability conditional grant, we have managed to introduce a learning program to learners with severe to profound intellectual disability in special care centers, and we have managed to unearth or to discover over 8,000 such children who are admitted in special care centers and are provided with the education. Next slide. This is the breakdown per province in terms of the number of special schools, as well as the enrollment figures per province, adding to the 137,000. Next slide. This is the distribution of special schools across the 9 provinces. I think honorable members may see that there is a high concentration in Gauteng, as well as in the Western Cape. That is where we have got most number of special schools. Next slide. This is a disaggregation of the total of 121,000 learners in public ordinary schools per province, and this is how the figures stand in terms of learner enrollment per province. Next slide. Yeah, this is about it's about access to education for learners with disabilities compared to learners without disabilities at specific age ranges, 5 to 6 year olds across the provinces. We can see that the numbers are higher for learners without disabilities who are accessing education at that age range. Disabilities in that age range compared to 89, which is the same with 7 to 15 year olds. Currently, we are at 91.64% for those with disabilities and 98.10% for those without disabilities. And lastly, for the age range 6 to 18 years, the picture there is actually more dire than it is. It stands at 68.84% compared to 85.76%. But all in all, here in every age range, what stands out, whether we talk learners with disabilities or without disabilities, we are not at universal access, especially at 5 to 6 as well as 7 to 15 year olds. Next slide. Now, some key measures that we have instituted to improve equitable access to basic education. Here, this slide presents the funding to special schools through Program 4, which goes to provinces as equitable share, and provinces then do direct transfers to special schools on an annual basis. For instance, in 2022, a total allocation of 13 billion rand was made for Program 4 to provide access, to strengthen access to education for learners who attend in special schools in particular. And the expenditure by end of December 2022 was at 67.7%. Next slide. Here we have budget allocation for the MTEF, the current MTEF, on the grant for conditional grant for learners with special with severe to profound intellectual disability, from 260 million in this current year to 272 next financial year, and then on the outer year, 284 million rand. These are projected allocations. And then expenditure on LSP, on the conditional grant for learners with severe to profound intellectual disability in 2022 by 31st March 2023. That is at the end of 2022-2023 financial year expenditure stood at 94%. Next slide. This slide I'm going to request my colleague, Ms. Modise, to present, because this is on resourcing of inclusive education.
Doc, I'm going to be taking it because Ms. Modise is chairing a meeting. This is the slide about the budget requirements in terms of the compensation of employees if we had to implement, if we had to get to full implementation in terms of inclusive education. It looks at various levels of the system. You'll see that the first one is head office, provincial head office, compensation of employees there. that would require about 138 million. And then the compensation district would be 603 million that would require. At school level, we'll need around 26 billion. And in compensation for hostel staff, and the compensation for hostel staff will need about 5 billion. And then for full service schools, we'll need about 1 billion. And then the total required budget for the compensation of employees is around 33 billion. And we also posted the guidelines for the budget requirements in terms of the transfers that you make to provinces and schools. In terms of the allocation to schools, we require an amount of 679 million, and the transfer allocation for hostel would be around 410 million. And for scholar transport, 207 million. We have not costed for the full service schools because the information that we had at the time was not usable. So we're still cleaning that information. That will be presented in the next briefing. So that is why you are seeing zeros there. But all in all, in terms of the transfers, would require about 1.3 billion. And I'm now going to the next slide, which is showing the total budget required versus the allocated budget over the MTF period. You will see that we've looked at the years 2023-24, the shortfalls there. The shortfall for the year 23-24, in other words, what we will need for 23-24. Is about 22 billion. If you look at column 3, you would see the total budget program 4.1. That is what we have. We've got 11 billion, so we need about 50% of the. We need like 22 billion. So we've got a deficit of 22 billion. If we go to the next, the 24-25, you'll see that in terms of the program that's available, in terms of the resources available in the program, we've got about 12 billion, and we've got a deficit of 22 billion if we would implement fully. And that for 25-26, we will have about 12 billion. And we'll have a deficit of 21 billion rand. So that's what it would take for the implementation. So we've created a breakdown below the table there to show what the shortfall would look like. You will see that in terms of the provinces, if you look at the province that is the smallest shortfall. That would be Northwest. In other words, Northwest, there is some promise there that in other words, it would mean that Northwest has funded most of the items that you have costed in terms of the guideline.
Thank you, Mr. Ngobo, for presenting on that. On the screening, identification, assessment, and support policy implementation. This is the progress that we've made since 2015, having trained over 178,000 teachers, over 10,000 officials, and over 8,000 ECD practitioners, where the training actually started from 2020 at ECD level. Next slide. These are milestones that we have made in terms of assessing learners, over 400 that have been assessed through the implementation of the policy. And this slide also presents on numbers that were identified, that were diagnosed successfully, that where cases were resolved successfully, and at school level, and even cases that were resolved and support provided through the intervention of district-based support teams to work closely with the schools. Next slide. Focusing on ECD practitioners, as we've already reported, we started training from 2020, and this is the progress that we have made, which actually culminated to the 8,000. And these are figures per province in terms of the ECD practitioners that have been reached. In some provinces, there are gaps, but as DG indicated earlier on, this information had to be coordinated at very short notice. So I want next time when we do the presentation, all these figures would have been provided. Next slide. Teacher training in specialized areas of disability. This is just to strengthen the teacher's capacity to be able to deal with the diversity of learners that they have to deal with in their classroom. So there are areas of specialization for which DBE is providing capacity building in areas of Braille, South African Sign Language, autism, etc. Just as examples of areas of specialization where there is ongoing capacity building. Next slide. So these are numbers of teachers that have been trained. In total, we've reached 206 thousand in various from across the provinces in these different areas of specialization. Next slide. This presents teachers trained per province, making up the 206. So these are over the period of 2017 through to 2022. As we can see, in some provinces, not much progress has been made. For instance, in the Northwest, in Limpopo, and to some extent in the Eastern Cape. Next slide. Among courses that teachers have access to from universities, we have courses offered for deaf and hard of hearing learners where teachers are trained. VET provides that training. University of Pretoria provides specialized training in visual impairment, and then with neurodevelopmental conditions, we have got University of Western Cape and UJ. Next slide. We have also, DBE has also provided to prospective teachers who want to specialize in inclusive education and who want to get specialized training, providing the Funza Lushaka bursaries. Next slide. We also have developed a Teaching for All initiative. This is more about progressive, inclusive approaches to teaching the diversity of learners or learners experiencing various barriers to learning. It's a 24-credit NQF Level 6 module that has been developed for the Bachelor of Education and Postgraduate Certificate in Education. And there has already been an uptake. This was developed in collaboration with British Council, UNISA, working with DBE. Next slide. Coming to full service schools and the inclusivity principle, honorable members can see that the 832 full service schools, this is how the full service schools can be broken down per province. We can see that actually Northwest has designated 230 full service school. It's actually the leading province in this regard. Next slide. What has happened in the process, though, is that in 2019, there was, in 2018, actually, there was a finding from the Auditor General in terms of the functionality of the schools that have been designated to full service schools. In other words, it did appear from the finding of the AGSA, Auditor General of South Africa, that most of the full service schools were actually not functioning at the required level in delivering the kind of quality education that they are meant to deliver. So that has been attended to by issuing, by DBE issuing a circular S4 of 2019 to try and address the findings from the AG and to raise the bar and functionality of full service schools. Next slide. These are some of the developments that have followed the issuing of that circular, where we are sitting with about, as part of the developments and improvements in full service schools, we currently have about 598 full service schools that are providing learners with appropriate and proper toilets. 357 of these full service schools are already providing outreach programs to other public ordinary schools. So that shows the progress that has been made and the improvements. This is the number of full service schools provided with proper toilets broken down per province. Next slide. Full service schools with support programs. Which have been provided after the issuing of the circular, broken down again per province. We haven't received figures for Northern Cape and the Free State, but developments have been happening also in those provinces. Actually, they have developed, the developments have happened across all the provinces. Next slide. This is the breakdown of full service schools that are already providing outreach programs of support to other public ordinary schools broken down per province. That total of 357 that has even gone beyond themselves. Strengthening the capacity of special schools, this is one of the policy imperatives of White Paper 6. Next slide. Here, as part of the strengthening process, Minister directed that in providing ICT connectivity in schools, that all special schools needed to be prioritized for this purpose. Next slide. This is the role that the different telcos has been playing, or the network operators, maybe let me put it that way. Each network operator was given a target of special schools to provide connectivity for purposes of teaching, learning, and assessment. I think that it's important that we emphasize that. It's not just for connectivity for administrative purposes, but it's for it to is to place trust in the classroom. And these are the targets that have been reached to date by the telcos. Next slide. Implementation of the universal service access obligation. This is still about the provision of access to ICT and assistive devices broken down per province. Next slide. Designated of special schools as resource centers, because the special schools also have got a responsibility of reaching out to schools in their districts, all schools in their districts, and provide even therapeutic and psychosocial support, also including the identification of barriers to learning, to strengthen the capacity of other schools. So these are schools that we refer to, special schools that we refer to as special school resource centers. Notably, Northern Cape has actually converted all their special schools to resource centers. Next slide. Provision of learning and teaching support material to learners with disabilities. That's where we are moving as part of providing access to quality education. Looking at the provision of Braille material, Minister established an advisory committee in 2017 that has been providing guidance and support to basic education to provide appropriate LTSM for learners with visual impairment. And a lot of progress has been made. Next slide. For instance, we can report that 26 master copies of Braille material and large print have been procured from Braille providers or from Braille plants or production plants. And those were uploaded on DPE website for provincial departments to procure for their schools across the provinces. Next slide. So this is the Braille production or the status of provision of Braille technology per school. I'm not going to go into each individual school, but the information is there for all the 22 schools for the blind across the country. Now coming to performance of learners with disabilities in the National Senior Certificate qualification. We are looking at the progress. Next slide. We are looking, firstly, we'll look at the uptake in South African Sign Language home language, which was introduced from 2015. And we had the first group of learners sitting for the National Senior Certificate on this subject in 2018, starting with 52 learners. And this number has grown over the years and has grown over four times up to 2022, where we had 210. Also the performance, although the performance is not matching the performance of other home languages at the National Senior Certificate level, but progress has been made. But unfortunately, we still have got depth in specialization in South African Sign Language in the country. And this is the progress that we are making in providing specialized training. We hope that we are going to see a turnaround in the short space of time. Next slide. These are enrollment figures. These are numbers that have entered and set for the National Senior Certificate in 2021 compared to 2022, where we've seen 2,397 that actually wrote the National Senior Certificate in 2021, but that number reduced more than half to 1,092 in 2022. We are currently investigating the reasons as to why the drop in the number. There are different reasons that are beginning to emerge, but we still want to investigate even those further. Next slide. Concessions and accommodations in 2022, we can see that Free State hasn't been doing that well in terms of providing concessions and accommodations in 2022. And Mpumalanga province has done exceptionally well, has provided the largest number of learners, grade 12 learners, with concessions and accommodations. Next slide. These are concessions and accommodations per disability, which are specific to different disabilities. Again, I'm not going to stay on those slides. This one is the performance of learners with disabilities in 2021 at the National Senior Certificate, where the overall pass was 80.8% nationally. 42.1% of those got bachelor passes, 24.1% got diplomas, 11.2% got higher certificate, and there was no learner who actually obtained a national senior certificate. Next slide. In 2022, the performance dropped very slightly, though, but it was still good. Where the overall passes were 79%, bachelor passes at 37.2%, 18.8%, diploma passes 6.8%, higher certificate in 2022. We are hoping for even a better improvement in 2023. Learning programs for learners with severe to profound intellectual disabilities. Here we are reporting on three programs, actually. Firstly, it is the learning program for learners with severe to profound intellectual disability in special care centers. Also, we are reporting on the grade R to grade 6 draft curriculum of 21 occupational subjects that is currently being piloted in about 187 special schools for learners with severe intellectual disabilities. And of course, the 22 occupational subjects that are now implemented in schools of skill for year 1 to year 4 learners. In terms of services for learners with severe to profound intellectual disabilities, here, in terms of the human resource provision, here we are talking about psychologists, therapists that have had posts created across the 9 provinces using the conditional grant, where to date 248 posts have been created for outreach teams to do the assessment and provide therapeutic services to learners with severe to profound intellectual disabilities. 209 of those have been filled. We have got vacancies across the 9 provinces of 39. Posts currently. Next slide. These are grant managers from each province. We can see that it's only in Western Cape where the grant manager for learners with severe to profound intellectual disability had to leave the department. So the post is vacant, but there is somebody already acting. Otherwise, these posts are actually filled in the rest of the 8 provinces. Next slide. These are the special care centers, 426 with 2,511 caregivers across the 9 provinces. Here we have we are giving an account of 7,650 learners in total, of which 4,184 are learners with profound intellectual disability, 1,025 are learners with severe intellectual disability, 418 are learners with mild to moderate intellectual disability. Those are learners that actually belong to schools of skill, but they are there. They are in special care centers. So a lot of work needs to be done to move them to schools. And then we have about 77 learners in special care centers who do not have any intellectual disability. So again, it's a question of information to parents as to where the services are available, and 1,900 that have not yet been diagnosed due to the shortage of these specialists. Next slide. This provides the training that has been conducted to date at different categories of human resource that is serving the special care centers without me getting into the specifics. Next slide. These are outreach services provided to special care centers by the psychologists and therapists that are working in this program. Again, let me not get into the level of detail in terms of each type of service and learners that are benefiting from that. The information is there. Next slide. In terms of curriculum and assessment policy statement, severe intellectual disabilities, we are piloting the curriculum, the CAPS, for grades R-6 that we reported about earlier on. These are the subjects that have been already drafted and are being piloted in special schools for severe intellectual disabilities. Honorable members will note that most of these subjects are actually making links with the occupational subjects that are implemented in schools of skill already, so that we are building the foundation right from foundation phase up to those higher levels. Next slide. Feedback from schools. Schools are very excited and they have been commending DBE for having come up with the curriculum, unlike in many years ago where there wasn't actually a policy or curriculum that was developed for, especially for special schools for learners with severe intellectual disability. But there are challenges. For instance, we still need to finalize and get the curriculum approved by CEM to policy for full implementation. Next slide. Occupational stream for learners with mild to moderate intellectual disability. That's in terms of the implementation of the occupational, the 22 occupational subjects in schools of skill. This actually provides more sort of a rationale why DBE has gone this route of introducing the three-stream model, which has now started to even benefit schools of skill or learners with disabilities, intellectual disability in schools of skill. I won't get into those details because this is the motivation, the rationale for the three-stream model broadly. Access to learning programs and services for learners in conflict with the law. This was after the conversion of these schools, the reform schools and schools of industry, which were transformed into child and youth care centers. We have 32 across the provinces, and then the number of learners who are benefiting from accessing education, even after the transformation of these schools, is at 1,568. Next slide. These are services that are also and learning programs that are offered per child and youth care center across the 9 provinces without getting into that level of detail. Yes. Let's proceed. These are also, we also provide them with therapeutic programs as well across these 32 child and youth care centers, because especially children in conflict with the law, the whole aim is to rehabilitate them so that they get to be reintegrated into their communities and back to the schools. Yeah. Transition from school to work for learners with disabilities, we are also tracking that. We are presenting progress that we have made and figures that we managed to track from 2019 2020 year where we started with 64 people with disabilities who actually were assisted to transit from school to work. And these are the figures across the years up to the current year. The current year, we've actually, for 2023-2024, we've set a target of 1,250 to get them to transit to the world of work. And then for the following year, setting it at 3,000. Next slide. This is the distribution of the statistics of these learners who've been assisted to transit into the world of work per province. Next slide. The next few slides are providing areas of work, that is areas of skills development per province, and that are taking priority for learners in each of those provinces to prepare them for the world of work. Again, the details are on the slides. Let's continue. Infrastructure in special schools, that's where we are moving into next. Learner transport for special schools in 2022-23 financial year, that is the last financial year, in terms of where it stood. But we are tracking this from 2018-2019 financial year up to 2022-23. In 2023, we reached 209 special schools that benefit that were provided with scholar transport, and also on the adjacent side, we are looking at number of learners that are benefiting from the scholar transport. Next slide, please. This is now taking it per year from 2018 to 2019. Where we started with 69 and benefiting 12, then the following year, let me not talk to the specifics per year. Maybe just here to say, the previous one, that's where we had 209 special schools have providing scholar transport and 28,000 learners benefiting from that. Next slide, please. Provincial capital projects, in 2022-23, there were 91 infrastructure projects at Elson schools or at schools for learners with special education needs. Of that 91 projects, infrastructure projects, 20 had been completed or have already been completed, and 22 are at construction stage. So there is significant progress that is being made in this regard as well. These are the projects per province, the infrastructure projects or capital projects. Let me not get into the specifics. In terms of norms and standards for school infrastructure, DBE developed norms and standards for infrastructure so that those norms and standards, I must indicate, were actually based on the Universal Design Principle, which is an international principle when it comes to infrastructure and even when it comes to transport provision. So the infrastructure should actually meet the requirements that are set out in those norms and standards. And our infrastructure planners are actually using those norms and standards even in building new schools, making sure that they are compliant with the universal design principles. From the ACD program, 1,052 schools have been served with appropriate sanitation, and from the SAFE program, a further 2,472 schools have been served with appropriate sanitation. And that is both in terms of public ordinary schools and, of course, even in special schools. Stakeholder engagements, there are different stakeholders that we have in inclusive education as a sector, and we have seen different engagements for different purposes. For instance, the first one is reporting about the development or the writing of the curriculum for South African Sign Language, and those were the stakeholders that were put together. We've spoken about the advisory committee that Minister established in 2017 for provision of braille material. Our DG also engages with the disability sector and other stakeholders for inclusive education to provide a regular update in terms of progress that we are making on implementing the program. In 2021, there was also an inclusive education summit that was jointly organized by Department of Women, Youth and People with Disability together with Basic Education. A lot of recommendations came from that summit, which are actually taking the implementation of inclusive education forward. And that is what we are continuing to implement as Basic Education. Next slide. Monitoring the implementation based on NEPA. DPE has a responsibility of providing monitoring and oversight in terms of the implementation of the policies. And so does this happen with regard to the inclusive education policy? There are monitoring and oversight visits that are done to a sample of schools and provinces. I won't get into details terms of the methodology, but what I can list out is that after each monitoring session in a district, DPE then holds feedback sessions at the district just to do a debriefing to district officials so that there are areas where focus needs to be placed. Next slide. Review of education white paper 6. After 20 years of implementing or rolling out education white paper 6, CEM approved the review of education white paper 6. And minister actually established a ministerial task team that is going to do this undertaking in January of 2023, and the work of the task team is set out for 24 months. Next slide. I can indicate that the ministerial task team that is reviewing White Paper 6 is made up of different experts and organizations that have got a role in the development of an inclusive education and training system. Like, we have independent experts, key inclusive education stakeholders, relevant government departments like health, Department of Social Development, just to make examples, senior officials at DPE, teacher unions, and any other parties the minister may decide to involve. Have been involved in this. So the review process is going to be undertaken by a cross spectrum of expertise and disciplines. Next slide. Progress, several meetings have been held. I can indicate that already a concept note has been produced to conceptualize how the process is going to unfold, even though this task team was established only this year, but a lot of meetings have already taken place by this team. Next slide. There are some identified gaps which continue to plague the implementation of inclusive education. Maybe without getting into, presenting each one of them. For instance, we are still addressing the issue of out-of-school learners with disabilities. Early identification of barriers to learning and intervention, inadequate capacity of teachers, limited access to curriculum offerings, which is being addressed by introducing the three-stream model, unsafe, inaccessible, and inappropriate learning environments, inadequate national resourcing mechanisms. But we've had a presentation on already the resourcing of inclusive education and the implementation thereof in terms of where we are, and some critical provisions that have come with the program of resourcing inclusive education. Next slide. These are measures to plug the gaps. Most of them actually I've already presented on, like the mobilization of out-of-school children and their placement, the review of white paper, etc., which are meant to mitigate the identified gaps. Next slide. That then, honorable members, that takes us to the end of the presentation, where we request the honorable members to actually note the progress that has been made to date on the implementation of inclusive education. Thank you very much, honorable chair and DG.
Thank you, Dr. Zimelane. Chair, we are done. Thank you, Doc. Over to you, Chair and honorable members.
Thank you very much, DG and Dr. Zimelane. I see the hands of Honorable Fansail and Madlingozi. In that order.
Good morning, Chairperson, to yourself, the administration from DBE and Parliament side, also the listeners today that's logged in. Chairperson, I just quickly wanted to read something from the NDP 2011, and it says, ensuring that all children with disabilities have access to quality education will help South Africa meet its employment equity goals in the long run. I want to take focus today on a school in the Eastern Cape. It's a special needs school. It's called Ikwezi Lukusa. It's near Mthatha. In this school, children sleep on beds of brick and mortar with a small little mattress. Here, children are left alone hours without supervision. Here, some of the children are even trying to change their own nappies. I've seen children dragging their naked bodies across cold floors. Here, there's no hot water even on the premises. It's also here where a male teacher was able to take a 16-year-old boy child one day, taking him home, raping this disabled child, only to return him the next evening. And the worst thing is that no one here realized that he was gone. So I'm sure that the children at Ikwezi Lukusa, not one learner feels valued, supported, or included. Then, Chair, moving on to the questions, that was just painting the picture of what is happening on the ground. Both on slide 13 and 18, it talks about the shortfalls. One is the shortfall on 18, and on 13 it says the under expenditure. Chairperson, I can't understand how there can be under expenditure on special needs schools, some as low as 45%, where provinces are unable to spend the money allocated to them when there's already shortfall in money allocated. Then we have circumstances and situations like this. Chairperson, I want to raise the point that the DA raises quite regularly, that we need to also get social workers doing a year after studies being placed at schools. These social workers will have to, like doctors, work a year of Zoom a year, but in these special needs schools to be able to assist, because I'm sure some of these places are massively understaffed. Then also, I wanted to find out from the department, what are they going to do to attract and keep qualified teachers in these special schools in the rural areas specifically? Then I wanted to jump to learner transport. I think it was slide 93. There's a picture painted from a couple of years, 18, 19, 19, 20, 21, etc., etc., and end on this year, where it says these are the provinces, these are the schools, and these are the learners that benefit. I wanted to find out, the contrary to this, how many learners qualify and need but don't get the service per province. I think Chairperson, for now, that should cover some of my questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Malingozi.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me greet and welcome the presentation by the Department of Basic Education, even though it has been updated drastically from the one that I received. Greetings to the Minister and all leaders present. Greetings to the honorable members of the portfolio committee and the visitors. Chairperson, let me just get Mkhulwini. What are the reasons of having the highest concentration of these special schools in Gauteng and Western Cape? And another question, Chairperson, besides the gaps and areas needed attention, what are other glaring hindrances that the government face in activating the inclusive education program? Chairperson, why has it taken so long to introduce such an important measure in our education system? Chairperson, the Bella Bill, just to digress a bit, the Bella Bill needs to be passed as soon as possible. The instances of having characters like the one in Pietermaritzburg, the merchants in preparatory school, where this principal, Mr. Llewellyn Bregan, was never suspended because he was protected by the SGBs. And only his deputy, Mr. Eric White, was not protected because he was speaking the truth. Chairperson, it is based on such instances that the school governing bodies are useless and biased in how they deal with students, teachers, and problems. Hence, the government, together with the parents and governing bodies, should be at the helm of it all, and the head of the department should be taking final decisions. Chairperson, let me, but we need to have this education decolonized as soon as possible. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Notata. Madlangos, you can lower your head.
Lower your head.
Not
am I audible, Chair? Good morning, Chairperson, and good morning to everyone on the Zoom meeting. Thank you for the presentation that has been put to us. I know it was a bit updated again. I just want to say, Chair, like, this is obviously a very sensitive and serious and sometimes very painful part of the sector that we have to deal with. And, you know, when we do these oversight visits, it's all good and well to get these presentations, and I think they are helpful. And sometimes when we do go to the ground, the situation that we reach there sometimes is very unfortunate. I know there's a school, for example, I'd reported in the meeting called Masnagane Special School in Loding in Mpumalanga. I mean, I want to commend and thank the DG, his office, for making an intervention there with that particular province. And I know that, that those children now have a temporary hostel there. And I think that's why these oversight visits help, because we get to see things in reality beyond presentations. And DG, you may not remember, but your office did call me on that school, and I indicated to them where it was, and they made the necessary interventions. When I went back there again earlier this year, I saw that the school that was across the road, a former school, was converted into a temporary hostel. But the conditions there are still really poor, because some of the classrooms are still made into hostels, and maybe, you know, if your office can be able to do a follow-up on that, you know, it does really help. The reason why I make this point is that Honorable Fanzel raises the issue of, you know, Kwezi Lokosa, you know, SMTATA, which is in an appalling condition. But KwaZulu-Kusa is just one but an example, Chair. And you may recall, Chairperson, when we did some oversights in Mpumalanga, we came across really ridiculous schools. When we did oversights in Northwest, we came across really ridiculous schools. And the conditions in those schools, I can almost guarantee you none of us would allow our children to go and study in those conditions. So the question I have for the department, and this is a very blanket question before I go to my specific questions on the presentation itself, is to ask, you know, is there a particular, from a national level now, because there's different programs that you have on infrastructure, say for CD and various others, is there a targeted program on infrastructure that is specifically aimed at aiding special needs schools? And I ask that specifically because you find that some of these schools are on private property rented by the department or the public works and whatever the case may be. But obviously the function of education is the responsibility of the department. And you'll find that there are appalling conditions at hostels, you know, poor sanitation facilities, no access to water to some of them, dilapidated infrastructure. I mean, there's a school that burned down in the Northwest with, you know, that imposed danger to children in these special needs schools. So my blanket approach question is around that. Because access is one thing. Access, giving access to children is one thing. It's all good and well. We can present the numbers in 2001, was like this, and so on and so on and so on. But if the quality and the infrastructure in those schools is not up to par, you might as well throw access out the window. Because those children will be studying in a very appalling, unconducive learning environment. And you will come across, for example, teachers that might not necessarily have the care or overburdened and so on. So is there an infrastructure program particularly targeted at improving special needs schools, building more special needs schools where they are required, and making sure that access means something because at least it's a conducive learning environment with quality there? And I think that was just the main blanket question just by observation. Then just coming to two very specific questions. You know, these full-service schools, sometimes some of them are just full-service schools by name. You know, there was a meeting I was in and I made a comment that I'm at a school and my connection is very poor. I was actually at a full-service school in Matadiere. And it's just a full-service school by name. Those children that attend that particular full-service school in Malubalube, that's the name of the school if you want to go and do some work there. It's in Hardenberg. You know, it's called a full-service school, but there were no teachers responsible for children with special needs. Even the infrastructure itself in that particular school does not accommodate children with special needs. And there was a child there that obviously had a physical disability on a wheelchair, but could not move around in that particular school. And you'll find that there's a massive problem of overcrowding in that school because, yes, we convert these schools to full-service schools, but we don't provide the necessary infrastructure in place, nor the teachers to make sure that, they have that. So I would like that to be looked into. But the proposal I would like to make to the committee, Chairperson, is that we need to have a targeted program in the new year, in 2024, to visit full-service schools and special needs schools with unannounced oversight visits. And it mustn't be special schools and full-service schools that are given to us by these provincial departments because they're going to take us to the schools they took us to in Herikwala, the schools they took us to in Northwest that look all glossy and nice. But they are not taking us to where the problem is because our responsibility is to try and help, is to try and assist, to say, department, where's the problem here? Is there a budgetary problem? Is there a coordination? Where's the problem? So that we're able to make the necessary intervention. Is there a legislative problem in terms of, you know, what is there? Is a policy problem? Is it equitable share? What is it? So that we're able to nip it in the bud so that these children are not, you know, studying in such bad conditions. So my proposal to you, Chair, and the committee is that we need to embark on that. We'll inform those departments the day before which schools are going to the next day so that they don't prepare for us like they did in the Free State and so on. Because the schools that we did on our individual capacity as members of parliament gave us a completely different picture. And I'm more than willing to send that list to you. Then how often, just to the department, how often are, you know, LSNs and full service schools and hostels inspected, especially in light of what, you know, has been released and exposed by Carte Blanche at the KwaZulu-Kusa in the Eastern Cape? And I think I don't want to belabor that point because that those conditions are quite horrible. The second question is that regarding SEERS and the learners identified, what are the barriers to resolving the remaining 62,395 cases? And do you maybe have a timeline of when, you know, those will be assisted? It's on page 18, I think, on your presentation. Do you have you know, a timeline on when will those be assisted? And then in terms of personnel, occupational therapists, social workers, you know, physiotherapists, etc. What are the numbers in terms of vacancies? And is there a collaboration with the Department of Higher Education in terms of DG? I've raised this before to say, look, there was two parts in terms of psychosocial support that I raised. I said, you know, we've got behavioral challenges in schools where you've got these children that, you know, bring safety hazards to school, and there's that behavioral problem. And how are you partnering with DHED to be able to allocate social workers and psychologists for that component? The second portion of that question and proposal for me was to say the partnership with the partnership that we have with DHED, how does it link to special needs, you know, schools? Because we know that they obviously need physiotherapists, they need, you know, psychologists and social workers. And I'll give you an example. In Oratambo district, they've got, I think, one or two that are allocated to all the special needs schools there that are responsible to give that support. And I can almost guarantee you it's not enough. I had to help a child there that was not placed in school, I think, for about 3 years. You know, there's not enough assessors, for example, for these children to be assessed, to be placed in these schools. So is there a partnership with DHED to say, look, what capacity support can we give for these, for special needs education, partnering with the Department of Basic Education to say, let's place, you know, physiotherapists, psychologists, social work students that have to obviously do a year long of practicals or being in the field, so that we can partner with them to alleviate the pressure. Then they can assist in terms of the school itself, and how do we then capacitate them to assist in terms of assessments so that we're able to deal with the backlog. The second last question I have is that how many schools in each province do not have staff trained in SEERS? And what are the protocols for those schools if learners are suspected of having special needs? That's just the question that I have. Second, lastly, then the last one is just to dive into to this thing of equity in local school, because, you know, I mean many of you may know that I'm very passionate about making sure that I go on the ground and see these things myself and bring it to the attention of all of us here. I mean, this school in 2001. Government took over, you know, KwaZulu-Kusa school. In 2018, Carte Blanche investigated the boarding school and uncovered how the infrastructure had deteriorated, leaving children to sleep on brick beds with only a thin mattress for comfort. The critical shortage of caregivers seemed to have been solved, yet the vulnerable special needs learners are still left with no one to feed them or change their nappies for hours on end. You know, and in the Carte Blanche expose, and I'm sure some of you would have seen, it's just a travesty to the department, and it's a very, very painful thing because it talks about dignity, children's human rights, and so on. You know, can I please request that the department, on a national level, makes the necessary interventions to address the issues at this particular school? It's in the Eastern Cape, and it's been exposed for everybody to see, not once, but twice. And things seemingly haven't changed. And maybe give us a report back as to what intervention you have done in that particular school and what consequence management has been put in place for people that were supposed to do their jobs. Because we sit in a system whereby people just do whatever they please. When they found to do wrong, they just continue as if life is normal. There's no consequences for that. And then the one thing I forgot, Chairperson, is that homeschooling or homeschoolers, you know, or home education, the home education unit in itself falls under inclusive education. And I just wanted to check, why isn't the DBE reporting, on this, in this particular report? Is it because of time constraint, or do you have information for us regarding that? Because, you know, you know, it does not show that, you know, it's dealt with in its entirety. And it'll be interesting to hear, you know, what it is, because it also, in the current discussions on the billable, falls under the same category as independent schools. So it'll be interesting to hear why that hasn't been reported on. I think, Chair, those are just my questions. I might have missed one or two of them, but if I need to come back to that. Sorry, the last one is on finances. The equitable share for special needs schools, is that done sufficiently in line with how equitable share has been shared across the sector? And is there a problem in terms of finances on all these categories of infrastructure, staff component, teaching, and so on? Is there a problem that we need to nib in the bud to make sure that these particular schools get the necessary support? Sorry, Chair, for being long, but I'm very passionate about this particular topic. Thanks.
Honourable Van der Walt.
Good morning, Chairperson and colleagues. And Chair, if you'll allow me, I think I should switch off my video because I'm in a bit of an unstable network area. Thank you. Chair, yeah, a lot have been asked, but I think it would be both colleagues referred to the carte blanche thing, and I think it would quite be essential for colleagues who did not watch carte blanche on Sunday night, the 3rd of September, to actually go and look at it on YouTube to really see what's happening at that school, so we're all aware what we're referring to. Chair, and then, yeah, thanks for the presentation, but I really would like to raise a concern. I think we always talk about our children and our elders are the most vulnerable in society, and our women. But I think today we are addressing the issue of the real, real vulnerable people in our society. And those are our children who's got special needs, to make sure that they one day also can live a life within their constraints to the fullest. And therefore, I would like to raise the issue. First thing is, it is great to come and list things, and we value the inputs because it also guides us what to look out for when we do our own personal oversight. But if you look at about 21 billion rand of shortfall listed by for each PD, the question immediately comes up, yes, so what? It's great to see these stats. But what is happening when that shortfall remains for the coming period that it's indicated here? How are we going to deal with that shortfall? And most of all, what are we going to cut? Because if you have such a huge shortfall in such a vulnerable part of our communities in society, what are we cutting? Because you have to cut somewhere to make up. And I think it would be absolutely fair to inform members of parliament on this committee, where are you going to cut if the shortfall remains? And we know there's a big chance that we won't get that money. Then I would also like to raise something that we often find, and that is that, in fact, we do not have enough educators specialized across the criteria of what is needed in our special needs schools. And it's great to say this is what we have, this is what we need, and we can refer to Funsho Lusaka, etc., etc. But here's the thing, this is not new. It's been years since I've been on the education portfolio, which we all know has been some time. What are we actually doing? Are we promoting specific special needs that are needed, and that we give incentives or something similar to make sure we attract those students that will be placed at these schools where that specific teaching is very much needed? It's great to list challenges. We should become really outcomes based, and we should do it ASAP, not in the next financial year or the MTEF period. You know, it's like just writing reports then. We really have to have a heart when we look at this sector of our learners. I also am a bit surprised, not pleasantly, on slide 51, I think it was, when about half of the percentage of learners who wrote, enrolled, but wrote, you know, you enroll and you write are two different things. And it should not be that we're looking into it. We are now in September. We should have known by now exactly what was the reason. I also, as you know, Chairperson, have been fighting this issue of therapists at schools for a long time. And as my colleague Nodara referred to HED, it's also part of the health department. And we really, really need to act on this. I'm speaking out of first-hand experience because one of our daughters was an occupational therapist, did a community serve year in Mount Fear, Mount Aleph area, and was made feel very, very unwelcome because suddenly people had to start working and caring for those learners. And as she explained, how hard it was because she knew after she leaves the end of that ComServe year, nothing will happen again. So maybe we should start speaking to students who've been placed and where little happens before, and when they are there, a bit happens because they are also, you know, have to rely on budgets and departments and colleagues that are placed at the same schools. And then when they leave, nothing happens again. So, Chair, I think we are really, really into trouble in assisting with people who are actually making this their career. I also want to raise the issue about learner transport, because it's great to see that the numbers are growing on schools that get transport, but I think we as a department must sooner than later come up with the issue where education department in all provinces aren't responsible for learner transport. There must now be, after so many years, at least be a definite thing. Who is transporting our learners, and is it safe? And is it accommodative for the specific learners? And then I would like to say, Chairperson, we always benchmark somewhere to get better and to improve. And sometimes it happens that it's across the borders of our country. And we know that in the UK, there's a base curriculum geared for a range of ability levels, which could fit very well into the national vocational qualifications if aligned with our own country's framework. Has the department received such requests? Were there any discussions on that? If not, will they look at it? And if they have listened to it, why is it not being recognized if it can make that big a difference in the community where we have special needs schools? And then, Chairperson, lastly, I would also like to know, we sort of, you know, sometimes cut out very good inputs that we get from the private sector or people who are actually specialized in this field. And there are people who would like to know how DCAPs will be properly implemented given the lack of suitability, qualified trade instructors. And let's say, look at areas like plumbing as an example. We also are concerned that these policy task teams are very state heavy with little input from on the ground independent providers and not always effective, Chairperson. So would it not be good to get a list of who is actually serving and how people with expertise and can actually volunteer to be part of finding a solution for this most vulnerable? And Jay, lastly, if that is in existence already is a challenge, I'm very concerned since we've got the ECD sector, because we can't wait till they are in grade 7 or whatever before we actually make sure that they get it, we get it right for them from the very, very start. Chair, I'm not going to speak on LTSM and all those other things. I think there's a lot to be asked, but let me stop for there. Thanks, Chair.
No, thank you very much, members. Honorable Lodola, can you lower your hand and from the vote? Okay, then there are no other members that that have got their hands up. But I think from my side, I'll just raise a few concerns, which of course we would expect in this type of education where you are dealing with learners with special needs. There is a slide that speaks on the enrollment dropout. My concern is what then are those children doing, and what, from your side of the department, what is it that you are doing to get them back? I know in many schools, COVID affected a lot of children with disabilities. They were taken from their schools by their parents, and they never returned. But I think department by now should have devised a strategy to get those learners back. Julia Richmond, can you just switch your mic? Can you mute? Julia Raymond from ACDP. And then the care centers that Melanie and your team, obviously it is known that they are not most of them in good conditions, particularly for those children, because most of the children that are they can hardly do anything for themselves. They can't even wash themselves. They can't even feed themselves. And there is a problem of staffing. I know most of them, they don't belong. They don't belong to DBE. They are probably under social development. But I think you've mentioned something about moving them to schools. What entails that process of moving them to schools? Because I think you would agree some or most of the care centers are not in good conditions. The last issue I want to raise is the issue of the conditional grant that the department is not using. Whether you are returning or you're doing something, whatever with it, but a conditional grant that you would receive to look into this type of schooling and not use it effectively. When actually there are schools where, you know, learners need to share a brailler, learners would not necessarily have the assistive devices that they need. And even in provinces where you would think that at least the situation is better, in your Western Cape and Gauteng, for instance, there are schools where learners need to share those devices. They can't get it. They can't have a device that is solely meant for one learner, which is a problem. Because obviously the learning or rather the teaching quality that we are giving to those learners is not sufficient. So I think from my side, those are the issues that I want to raise. And in the absence of hands, I will allow then the department to respond. I'm not sure if the teacher is here, or maybe Dr. Snellan. I don't know who's here.
I'm very much here, Chair.
Oh,
I'm
going
to stay up to the end. Yeah. Should we proceed, Chair?
Yes, you can proceed.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. As always, we take serious the points that you have raised, the observations that you have made. As we indicated that we've tried our best to reflect on the progress that we have made as best as we could without hiding anything. The minister has appointed, the presentation reflected that, the ministerial task team on inclusive education to take a complete overhaul on inclusive education, despite the progress that we have made. The minister has appointed this ministerial task team, which is doing excellent work, made up of people who come from the disability community, various aspects, including people from universities, to guide us, to help us on taking a complete overhaul on inclusive education. I must also say that the incident of the school in the Eastern Cape is extremely unfortunate. I must accept that. I saw that only last night when it was shared with us by our communication. And I immediately sent a message to the head of the department, acting head of the department, Dr. Nuku, Wiselo Nuku. And he has assured me that he's definitely going to deal with this matter. But his initial response, which was preliminary, was that at the core of this is what I think Honorable Nodata indicated, that some of these schools are schools, are properties, are schools that are on private property. And because of that, the learners become the grass that suffers when two elephants are fighting. In other words, the department and the owners of private property who do not seem to get into an agreement, and that impeding the renovation, the upkeep, and getting these facilities to the level that it should be. That's one dimension, but I said to the HOD, I hear what you are saying, but there are other issues that are not related to facilities, issues related to staff, issues related to just conditions of the facilities themselves, which to me are not necessarily impeded by Section 14 of SASA, of schools, public schools that are on private property. He has undertaken to send me a full report on that. I'm going to send a team also to the school to go and do our own investigation. And at the right time, we would even share that report, as Honorable Nodada requested, with your Honorable Committee, Honorable Chair. And we'll monitor progress on how to deal with such an institution. Our presentation has indicated that we are taking an audit 442 of the schools. It could be more, but my last count was 442 schools of learners with special education needs. We are taking an audit of them, also to fit into the process of the ministerial task team appointed by the minister, the CEM on Thursday is expecting us to present this report to them. And the CEM would also be expecting us to even come back after having presented this report, because we are not done with an audit as yet. And this audit will tell us what exists in each and every school, 442 of these schools. Beds that are there, what is the condition of the beds, the care that learners are receiving, what is done by us, DBE, not provinces. We are doing it as DBE, to get a full sense of what happens in each one of these schools. I therefore want to say the issues that are raised, we will address them. But what is important is that we are also taking an audit over and above the reports that we've been getting. Because Honorable Nodad, I was saying, it's well and good to bring a report here, but does the report speak to what is on the ground? We do get information from provinces, but we're also going to do our own audit so that when we put our head on the block, it's based on that audit that would have carried out. And I do welcome a program from your honorable members as well, Honorable Chair, to go out and even do an oversight visit on these schools. Because by so doing, as they have done before, they helped to bring a difference in areas that ordinarily would have been a blind spot from us as DBE or even as provinces. So that we welcome, but I've already indicated that the minister has established a ministerial task team over and above guiding the review of White Paper 6, but also guiding us on how to turn around the situation in what Honorable van der Walt has emphasized, which I had already made in my opening remarks, that these are the most vulnerable in society. If we are unable to take care of them, then it becomes difficult to convince the nation that we'll take care of other learners if our presence is not felt among the most vulnerable in our society. So Dr. Simelane and Mr. Ngobo will help me to deal with the specific questions raised by honorable members. I'm going to start with the questions raised by Honorable Van Zyl. The questions are many, Chair, although not many of you asked questions. For instance, Honorable Van Zyl only, I've noted 13 questions that she has raised. Honorable Nodada, I think it's 11. Honorable Van der Walt is 13 also. You raised 4. So we'll do our best. If there's anything that I might have missed or not fully covered, Dr. Simelane, Dr. Mthembu, and Mr. Ngobo will help me to deal with those. I agree with Honorable Van Zyl in terms of what the NDP is saying. In fact, the NDP is saying an inclusive society and inclusive economy is predicated on our success in inclusive education. So I fully agree with that. And I have made a commitment in terms of the school in the Eastern Cape that featured on carte blanche. So I have made an undertaking on what we are going to do there. And then in terms of slide 13 and slide 18, shortfall, remember we were saying we were doing a mapping, a budget mapping of what it would take to get all learners with special education needs reaching the level of Nofi schools. And that's why we talk about the shortfall. And I said we are in discussions with provinces. Chair, I'm going to request that maybe Dr. Semilane must come in at this stage. I've just been called by the law enforcement officers that I must just respond to them, if you don't mind. I'm not on the road. I'm on the side of the road. But they are just calling me in, if you don't mind, Chair, for Dr. Semilane. To deal with this, I'll just come back immediately. Is it fine, Chair?
Yes.
Okay. You have taken me out of a program of lawmakers of the country. Dr. Semilane, please, I'll come back.
Thank you very much, DG. Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think the question that DG was actually addressing at the point of being pulled out was the question that was raised against the shortfall of 21 billion rand. On the guidelines for resourcing inclusive education, which have been put together by the department, as DG has indicated, these are proposed budget allocations to resource the implementation of inclusive education adequately and to make sure that all the vulnerable learners receive adequate and appropriate support. And it is what it's going to take the sector in terms of injection, in terms of funding. So it's not like it's a shortfall in the sense that we have to plan how we make up for the shortfall. So one of the proposals that is already on the table that is coupled with the resourcing of inclusive education is to move towards declaring all schools for learners with special education needs as Nofi schools, because that would also take off the burden from the parents who are actually struggling. And some of the parents are using the disability grant that is paid to their children to sort of pay school fees. So this move is going to go a long way in taking off the burden from the parents, but also the plan for rolling out the resourcing of inclusive education guidelines is one of a phased-in approach up to 2030. So that because we don't have that kind of money available, for instance, the 21 billion rand, but with a phased-in approach, we definitely are going to be making progress, and we are going to mitigate this shortfall of 21 billion rand. So it's based on the declaration of schools for learners with special education needs as Nofi schools, so that government actually takes full responsibility of providing all the necessary financial support or budget allocation to these schools to support the implementation of the program.
Dr. Semilane, I'm sure I'm ready. I could continue. Sorry.
Thank you, DG.
Sorry, Chair. So we've covered the issue of funding, Chair. So it's not a shortfall from the normal shortfall of having to reduce what you've been funding these schools for. It's bringing them to the level of no fee paying schools. For all these years, the schools of learners with special education needs did not enjoy the benefits of being no fee paying schools. And that's why, the mapping that we have talked about with Dr. Semilane has also explained, it is an attempt to make all schools for learners within special education needs no fee paying schools. As I've said, all over the world, I mean, all countries will tell you, given the nature of support that you have to provide, it's very expensive. And I'm sure South Africa will be among the very few countries that are bringing those schools to the level of no fee paying schools. And we've worked out the financials, and we're saying that's the amount of money that is going to take. And it is not difficult to reach that. We've mapped it out. As I've said, we are just waiting to finalize our discussions with provinces so that provinces commit, and then we take it to the level that these schools will be no fee paying schools. And Dr. Similani has also even shared the timelines that we have put forward to provinces, and provinces are willing to go that direction. And then the issue of understaffing, as I've indicated, Honorable Fansail, probably we must wait for this audit, and it won't be long. Probably before the end of the year, we could have this data available so that it could give us a sense of where we are with understaffing and all these things that besiege schools of learners with special education needs, so that we're able to address them from fresh data that would have gathered from the audit. Teachers who are not qualified, you know, and briefly, my own training in education included education of learners with special education needs as part of my Bachelor of Arts in Education, BAS. But over and above that, there are people who have also specialized in education for learners with special education needs. And the reason why we've included them as priority areas in Funza Lushaka, we realize that the number of people who just go to university or to college to specialize in this area was very low. And there were many teachers in some of these schools who landed in some of these schools as part of the redeployment exercise. And I'm sure some of you would recall redeployment, where teachers were taken from this school to other schools, and some were taken to public ordinary schools, to schools of learners with special education needs, without the requisite skills, knowledge, and experience to be able to teach there. And we said, and I'm answering to the question that says, and I think it's Honorable Van der Waal who said, it's not about why do you come with Funza Lushaka now, because this problem is not new. Yes, it's not new. It's because in the past we had relied on universities and other institutions to produce teachers in these areas. But because of these other processes of redeployment and so on, many teachers who are qualified to teach in this school, their numbers diminish. And we are responding through Funza Lushaka that this is a priority area that we need to address as well. So I thought that I must respond to that in that way. In terms of psychosocial services, we're responding through the grant, LSPID grant, and the multidisciplinary team, the therapists, the psychologists, the social workers, whilst in the meantime, we are unable to get all the schools, their dedicated teams, to be able to provide the services to them. These teams are located in districts to be able to serve these schools and public ordinary schools. But a desirable situation is to move towards particularly providing schools for learners with special education needs, your psychosocial services that is dedicated to all schools. But in the meantime, they share among themselves. In terms of learner transport, well, as the presentation would have shown, the numbers have increased, and we are continuing to monitor this, also to ensure that these people are providing learner transport to our learners. In the majority of instances, Chair, what we did was to provide funds to schools of learners with special education needs to be able to use or to procure buses that are equipped to ferry these learners, rather than, you know, leaving them to use the public mode of transport, which is not always conducive for learners with special education needs. And I must accept and concede that in certain instances where learners depend on public transport, which the audit will give us more information about, some of the transport facilities do not have the requisite equipment, particularly for learners with special education needs. And then the issue of the highest concentration in Gauteng and Western Cape, well, all that I can say is that it's a fact of history, but also, truth be told, Gauteng is one province that moved on a massive scale to build, even recently, under MEC Lesufi, and even convert some of the schools from public ordinary schools to schools of learners with special education needs. Preparatory schools, there's an issue that was raised about a preparatory school and the way governing bodies have dealt with issues that relate to a school principal. Let me commit that we'll follow this matter up and we'll have to come back to you and give our report here with respect to the matter that was raised by the honorable member. And the issue of decolonizing education, we are trying to do that as a ministerial task team on history, but we are doing quite a lot of work to deal with areas that require attention in terms of decolonizing the basic education system. And then in terms of Honorable Nodada, I agree we need to approach the schools with the sensitivity that this sector requires. And thank you for the feedback about the school in Mpumalanga. And again, we'll follow up on other schools that have been raised here by honorable members to make sure that they receive the attention that they deserve. The school in the Eastern Cape, I've made an undertaking about it. Full service schools, we've indicated that we had to issue a circular to provinces to get them to comply and even stop them from, you know, continuing to declare schools as no fee, I mean, as full service schools when they do not meet the full criteria and the requirements of being a full service school. The school that Honorable Nodada also raised here, which experienced overcrowding, and that there are no teachers to teach learners, will follow that up as well. I've endorsed and applauded the program of the portfolio committee going out to target the schools unannounced. That I'm applauding, Honorable Chair, and that see us, what are the barriers and timelines to address things that are part of the barriers to learning. And I'm sure Dr. Simelane will, or Mr. Ngobo will respond to that. The issue of personnel in terms of vacancies, I'm sure the audit will give us more information on that, as I've undertaken to come back to the committee to address this through the audit that the colleagues are carrying out. Coincidentally, Honorable Nodada, we are now working with the Department of Social Development and the Presidency has also impressed on us to work together to identify social workers that can be placed in schools. I think the idea that you've been fighting for all the time, including some of the social workers who are in their final year, to place them in schools so that schools can start to benefit from social workers, psychologists, therapists, and so on. So we are working with the Department of Social Development. I'm working with the acting DG Mtunu on this program that the president required us to work together in. And then the issue of carte blanche, I've made a commitment about it. Home education, Honorable Nodada, sits within the same directorate with inclusive education, but we're requested by the Honorable Chair to come and address the Honorable Committee on Inclusive Education. If we are requested to come and address on home education, we can come back. The two sit in the same directorate, same line function, but we deal with them separately. So I agree with you that they are in the same line function, but in terms of provision, we deal with them separately. That's home education. And can I just humbly request that we must get used to call it home education and not homeschooling. Homeschooling is an old nomenclature which does not exist in law and in our policies anymore. And then equitable share. Yes, in the main, provinces use equitable share to fund the provision of, I think it's program three, if not four, I think it's program three, special education. I remember now when I was in the province, called program three, it's part of the equitable share that is allocated to provinces. And the point that Honorable Nodada also raised was whether we've been monitoring to check the funding and the allocation across the nine provinces. It's something that we'll pay more attention to going forward in monitoring whether provinces are funding and providing for quality education more or less the same across the nine provinces. Honorable Van der Walt, the carte blanche story, I've made my comments on it. We'll follow up with the Eastern Cape Education Department and we'll come back to you to report. I agree with you that these are the real vulnerable from society. And then in terms of the shortfall, I've explained the shortfall, and Dr. Simelane also added to the explanation that it's not the shortfall of the normal allocation now, but it's the shortfall that will bring the schools to a better position. And we are in discussion with provinces to realize this vision of bringing schools for learners with special education needs to be NOFI schools as well. The issue of the inadequate number of teachers, I've explained that. And that we must be outcomes-based. We are trying to be outcomes-based and not just list challenges. Maybe in future, as we identify gaps and challenges next to them, will indicate remedial measures. I accept that in the presentation, that's not how we have captured this. Slide number 51, percentage of learners who wrote. When Dr. Simelane presented, I think he indicated that during COVID, learners who were most affected were learners with special education needs, because of the vulnerability associated with them and because of the protection that their parents would want to provide to them. And that's why even some of them, you know, the number dropped in terms of the numbers who wrote because when parents felt that they were not safe, they decided to keep their children at home. It's not that they've dropped out. It's just that parents felt that the situation or the environment was not completely safe for their children. And now and again, they will exercise their own judgment to decide that their children are withdrawn from even going to write exams or even attending school. But the performance of learners with special education needs has always been above even the performance of our the sum total of our schooling. For instance, last year, I think they performed at 84%, and overall, we performed at 80%. Learners with special education needs and learners in correctional services facilities perform far better than the entire system. But we have already started in our engagement with provinces. We've told them to prioritize schools of learners with special education needs. As learners get extra support, those learners must also be prioritized. We've placed them right at the center of our radar. The suitability of CAPS, in the presentation of Dr. Simelane, he covered two curricular dispensations that we are bringing to the system. The other one is for learners with severe intellectual disabilities, and Dr. Simelane can just bring that up. We are giving progress in terms of the new curriculum that we are bringing in there. The other one is the CERT stream. The CERT stream, it's a curriculum or curriculation which came out of the need identified from schools of learners with special education needs, which used to offer skills programs which were not recognized in the system. We are working with Umalusi to finalize the curriculum and the qualification in that regard, which will start even with NQF level 1 and will go up to NQF level 4. So Dr. Simelane and Mr. Ngobo can also add in that respect. We are looking for lasting solutions for these learners. And that's why I've indicated about the ministerial task team and some of the work that we are doing. ECD, we have covered ECD in our presentation. We are identifying learners with special education needs from an early age. In fact, we are going to the extent of identifying these learners before they are born as part of our work in early childhood development. And then, Chair, some of the things that you raised were about dropout rates. We are dealing with dropout rate for learners with special education needs in the same way as we deal with dropout rate for learners in public ordinary schools, particularly addressing the parents of learners who do not want to release some of these learners, or some parents who withdraw these learners because they feel that they are not safe. We are addressing them in different platforms and so on. I think you're absolutely right. Care centers are with either Department of Health and Social Development, depending on individual provinces, and they do not necessarily fall within our ambit, but we are working with those departments because we have an obligation to provide education there. But Dr. Simelane and Mr. Ngobo can add here as well. You are also right, Chair, in terms of the conditional grant of learners with profound and severe intellectual disabilities. We've not been doing well in all the 9 provinces, and we've been meeting with provinces to monitor their performance, including Honorable Fancy, monitoring the performance of provinces with regard to equitable share. That is on program 3 in provinces, which is for special schools. Chair, at this stage, I'm going to humbly request that you allow me to bring in Dr. Mtembu, Dr. Simelane, and Mr. Ngobo to help me to respond to these questions and issues raised by honorable members. Thank you very much. Dr. Mtembu? Dr. Similani and Smetsinov?
Thank you. Thank you. Good morning, Chair. Good morning, DG. Thank you very much, DG. I think you've covered most questions, but I would like to add on the questions that were specific to the land functions, like the question around CS and the resolving. I think where we are with CS right now is that we've completed the initial training of teachers, and what we're doing now is we're mopping up in schools where there are teachers who have not been trained, but also where some schools were missed. So the provinces are mopping up in that regard. But the focus has now moved to strengthening the implementation of CS. You will see the slide that shows the number of learners screened, the number of learners placed. And that is beginning to look at how learners are benefiting from the training that teachers have received. If you, for instance, look at that slide, you will see that the number of learners who are retained in their schools, who are assessed and found to be experiencing barriers to learning, are no longer the number of learners who are assessed and found to be experiencing barriers to learning and are retained in their schools instead of referred to other schools is increasing, which points to the fact that the capacity of schools to support learners who are identified to be experiencing barriers is actually improving. For instance, if you look at the number of learners who were retained, we've got 21,000, and only 6,577 learners were referred to other schools. So that indicates that the capacity of schools to support learners who are experiencing barriers is increasing. But also, if you look at the number of cases that were successfully resolved at the school level, you would see that we've got over 42,000 were resolved by schools themselves, and only 25,000 was referred to the district. And I would like to indicate that there is therefore, yes, there may be instances where teachers are still, because teachers still join, and as they join, then provinces make sure that they receive the necessary training. And with regards to the partnership with DHET in respect of work integrated learning for teachers, that continues, and special schools do provide space for the students to practice there. It's quite a vibrant program that we are collaborating on with DHET, and I think the importance of that program became pronounced during COVID when schools were not in full operation, and we had to make provision, then we had to make arrangements for the students to be able to be absorbed in schools. The issue around slide 51, it's quite an interesting one, and the DG has covered part of it, but I would like to raise this matter that we are picking up, what we are finding from the provinces as well, is that The drop in numbers of learners with disabilities who sat for the National Senior Certificate can also be attributed to the fact that our system, the identifier of learners was the was the condoned MSc. In other words, the learners with disabilities were taking the condoned condoned NSC. And what happened in 2022 is that some of the learners with disabilities took the NSC that is taken by learners without disabilities. We found that in the Western Cape, for instance, there is evidence that the drop can also be attributed to, it could be a good drop in the sense that the learners were now taking the NSC that is taken by learners without disabilities. In other words, they were moving out of the condoned matric to condoned NSC to the NSC that is taken by learners without disabilities. And I think this will begin to show in the NSC results for 2023, but we have evidence that this is what happened in some provinces. The issue around the DCAPs, I think that one is working. There are some good examples that are coming out of the pilot with the private sector working in collaboration with schools to support the program. So as much as we are experiencing challenges in terms of the expertise, but there are some good examples that are already happening between the provincial education departments and the private sector. DG, I think those were the areas that I could pick up that required us to cover. But maybe the last one here would be around the issue that we must get it right from HR. I think there is the sector has agreed that the focus on that you must take advantage of the ECD function shift, and in that regard you would see that in terms of the numbers of teachers of practitioners trained, greater practitioners trained stands at just over 8,000. It is because the sector has taken a decision that the focus must be on the foundation phase, including grade R, to align with the principle of early identification and intervention. And this seems to be working very well because the timing is right. So, DG, I wanted to make those additions. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, DG and Honourable Chair and members. Maybe just a few additions, but most of the questions have been covered. In fact, adequately covered. Just maybe a slight addition on the SEAS policy implementation. I think as basic education, firstly, we have realized that we need to strengthen capacity of districts by deploying most of the specialists. For instance, educational psychologists, place them at district level rather than at individual schools, because I think we have found from statistics that in South Africa, we have about 9,000, only 9,000 educational psychologists that are qualified. So if you look at that limited number, then that is why, especially when it comes to these specialists, in particular educational psychologists, we need to place them at the district so that we increase their outreach to more learners in the districts in which they are serving. And therefore, that will facilitate and expedite the implementation of the SEAS policy. It's just an addition. In terms of the question from the chair about how to get back learners who were withdrawn by their parents during COVID and get them back to school. DG has established a task team that is made up of experts from different departments, like social development, like Department of Health, as well as from the disability sector as well, and across different branches at DBE, because we need that multidisciplinary approach in the placement of learners with disabilities in school. So that task team has already started its work. And it's going to, as part of its plan, there is a planned sampling of schools, starting even from the special care centers, to sort of look at the feasibility of the plan that they have, they are already putting in place in terms of placing these children to schools. But on the question of appropriate curriculum, we have reported in this presentation that DBE has developed the curriculum made in the main of occupational subjects from grade R to grade 6 for all schools for learners with special education needs that admit learners with severe intellectual disability, mainly because if we look at the progress that those, the throughput rate of those learners in schools has been very low. In fact, a majority of them wouldn't go past the foundation phase because the curriculum was not appropriate that was being offered in the past. And the fact that we have developed the curriculum in such a way that it will help them to articulate to grades even higher than grade 6 and to link even to schools of skill which are currently implementing the occupational curriculum. And what is specific and what makes the occupational curriculum or subjects even more appropriate is that they are made up of 75% practicals and only 25% theory. So it makes it easy. And that is why even the feedback from the schools for learners with severe intellectual disability that are piloting this curriculum has been very positive and very encouraging. And in fact, schools are really urging DBE to move with speed to formalize and finalize the curriculum so that it is approved to policy for full implementation. I thought maybe those would be the few additions from my side. Otherwise, I think most of the questions were addressed by the DG and, of course, Mr. Ngobo. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Simelane. Thank you, Chair. We'll come back on those that we have not addressed, and as we usually do that in writing. We'll do our audit after this meeting. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Team DBE. Note that your hand is up. Richmond, whoever you do not have a right to speak in this meeting. So can you please lower your hand? And this meeting is meant for the members of parliament. So you must go and contest speaker so that you are represented and speak. Nagat.
Thank you, Chair. Just two things from my side. It won't necessarily be a follow-up, but maybe to get a view from Dr. Simelane. Look, I think I raised this as well, Chair, with your normal schools or your ordinary schools that are no fee paying schools, quantiles 1 to 3. And I had asked in the past that, look, there are different models in the world around the intention of full access to learning, and special needs learning is also, quite critical in that. And I see that there's 54 independent schools that provide special needs education. And I would assume that obviously some of them would be fee-paying and so on. And I wonder what investigation the department can do as part of their costing to say, look, we've done the costing to say how much it would cost for us to be able to give access to special needs education, and it can be done, and let's look at the methods. As to links to that, this voucher system that is used in Lithuania and other, you know, other parts of the world, to say let's not force children to go to bad public schools just because they are free, but allow parents to make those decisions to say, look, there's an allocation of some sort that is given by the government, and then I've got the choice to say, look, I can take my child to that independent school and maybe top up, and or for example, you give parents that the choice to utilize on how they best educate their children, and whether there's been an investigation as part of your research on how that could work for special needs education, because obviously we're speaking with a certain number of children in this instance, to make sure that as much as we want to make access broad, we give that parental choice to them so that we don't force them to go to bad public special needs schools as the case, in the Eastern Cape that we've mentioned this morning, but to give, you know, that option for parents. So I wonder whether there's an investigation that has been done on that nature, and you know, it'll be interesting to get feedback from that. Obviously, I mean, they can respond to it briefly now, Chair, or you know, maybe give us a presentation around it, because I always raise it from a perspective of saying let's not force children to go to bad public schools. And I know for one, you know, I was forced to go to a bad public school just because it was free, and it was the only non-fee paying school in my area, you know, and I come across a lot of those when I do the oversight. You know, and I know that the point of the department is to say, let's give access to children that cannot pay, give access to education. But sometimes we end up forcing them to go to bad public schools because there's no other option. And whether we are exploring those other options is where I'm asking the question. I think that's the one, Chair. And I appreciate obviously the feedback on social workers, because I had a follow-up message, a question on it. And then the last one, DG, I just wanted to check on in Northwest, the full service schools in Northwest, you know, they are determined to be full service schools, but I think it's something that you may want to look at, because you'll find out that they call them, you know, learners with severe, profound intellectual disabilities in special care centers, yet children are not in schools. And therefore, you know, are they really, you know, learners in that instance? And maybe that's something maybe you might give guidance in the second meeting. Sorry, Chair, I just wanted to ask those two things. Thanks, Chair.
Okay, DG and the team, would you rather try to speak on this matter now, or would you want to come back on it?
No, let me quickly do it. Okay. Well, of course, thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Nodad. And this is in history, really, it's not recent. I used to visit every school for learners with special education needs in the Northwest. And therefore, the criteria was very clear. It had to be followed before a school is declared a full-service school. In fact, in some of the public ordinary schools, you'll have a unit, it's called a blind unit, or unit for learners who are either blind or deaf. You'd have those units attached. One such was in Koster, where you
What happened? Is it me who's lost, or is the DG?
I think it's the DG, Chairperson.
Oh, okay. Job?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. And thanks, Honorable Nodada. I take the question on the investigation on the provision of, shall I say, quality education to learners with special education needs in independent schools for learners with special education needs, the 54 that honorable note that I have cited. I think I'm taking this as guidance and as a proposal from honorable note data, because we have not actually undertaken an investigation that is as specific as directed by honorable note data. So I take that as an investigation that we definitely have to undertake and then come back and report to the honorable portfolio committee members.
Chair, I'm back. For some reason or another, I maybe annoyed somebody and I got kicked out.
No. It's you on the road. No, we are not kicked out. Who will?
No, I'm here at Umalusi. I'm outside. I'm in the city center of Pretoria. So I'm not on the road. I'm right here. But I'm sorry. But Dr. Simila, the voucher system we've not explored in South Africa. But on a lighter note, Honorable Nodas, I thought you'd say to me, you see, that's the difference that especially you who know where the, you know, how the system used to be like. You know, in 2011, you had 80% of schools that are dysfunctional public schools. Today, you've got less than 20% of schools that are dysfunctional. The improvement that is happening in the system happens from schools that used to be dysfunctional because they've come to the party. And I thought as a public representative, you'd say to me, I want you to fix the schools that are bad instead of taking learners from schools that are bad to private schools that are deemed to be better. In fact, many of our public schools are better than private schools now. That's why our numbers, even during COVID, instead of going down, and I put my head on the block on this, anyone can go and check it out. Public schools numbers went down for various reasons. Schools in the public sector went up from 12 million learners to 13.4 million over time, when there was a decrease in the private schooling sector. Of course, some people would say it's because people were no longer affording private schools, but people have also realized over time that there are actually public schools that are better than private schools. But I hear your point. The voucher system would be good because a learner would be able to go to any school of his or her choice. But unfortunately, as Dr. Simelane has indicated, we have not explored the voucher system in the country. We still need to even sort out the issue of, you know, the poverty ranking of schools. At some point, we're ready to declare our schools as being fee-paying and non-fee-paying schools. But we haven't gotten to that point because funding could not afford us to move in that direction. But my humble appeal is that you need to put pressure on us to get all our schools to be at the level that they should perform and to even perform better than, you know, the so-called schools that are doing better. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much.
I'm done.
Thank you very much. No, Dada, is your hand up again?
No, it's the Lagos hand. Sorry, Lagos.
Oh, okay.
We need to have tea with Honorable Nodada. When I come to Cape Town next time, I'm going to have tea with him.
We are ending this one. Since you were having tea, 2019.
Yeah, it's a long time.
It's bullying a Jacob Zuma on me. I'm waiting for that tea.
I don't know anything about those things. Politics are just too high for me. No.
No, thank you very much, DG and your team, for this presentation. Like I've said, thank you very much for also preparing it in a very short space period of time. Against all the hassles that we've put at you through this weekend. Siyabonga, siyabulela. This then takes us to an end of this meeting. I don't think we will deal with minutes. Mr. Brown is not around. So we will do minutes probably when we meet next week in Parliament, or when time allows for us to adopt the minutes, because we've got some quite number of minutes that we need to adopt. So in those few words, let me thank you, members. Also, we are meeting this afternoon in Parliament. Those that will be there in Parliament physically, and those, some of us will be in virtual platform. So let me thank everybody for being part of this meeting. Like we have said, we are going to have our next meeting in Parliament next week, and the communication will be shared to members thereof. The meeting is adjourned. Siyabonga.
Enkosi. Thank you very much, honorable members. Thank you, colleagues.
Okay. Okay. Okay.